China-U.S. relationship has come to a new critical juncture.
China has a new representative in Washington. This is Friday, July 30th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a China-Taliban meeting draws a positive reaction from the United States. Recent rains have been too much for even Chinese sponge cities to handle. We'll check in with the Tokyo Olympics. New COVID-19 infections are spiking throughout Japan. It is all on today's VOA Asia. China's new ambassador to Washington, Chen Gang, wished the United States victory against COVID-19 and said great potential awaited bilateral relations, striking an optimistic tone as he arrived at his new post amid deeply strained ties. Reuters' Brian Wood has the story.
China's new ambassador to the U.S., Chen Gang, on Wednesday expressed optimism about his country's relations with Washington. He hoped for America's swift recovery from COVID-19 and said the two countries have great potential for working together.
I firmly believe that the door of China-U.S. relations, which is already open, cannot and should not be closed. This is the trend of the world, the call of the times, and the will of the people.
Chen is replacing Chui Tangkai, China's longest-serving ambassador to the U.S. He stepped down last month after 8 years. Chen did two stints as a Chinese foreign ministry spokesman between 2006 and 2014. He earned a reputation for pointed public defenses of his country's positions. Chen's remarks come days after talks between Chinese and American diplomats ended in tension. Washington and Beijing signaled concessions had to be made on both sides in order to move forward with any talks. U.S.-China relations had faltered drastically under former President Donald Trump. The post of the U.S. ambassador to China hasn't been filled since last year, when Republican Terry Branstad stepped down to help with Trump's re-election campaign. Biden has yet to nominate a replacement, though foreign policy circles consider Nicholas Burns, a former ambassador to NATO, a favorite.
Brian Wood reporting. VOA Asia continues. China told a visiting Taliban delegation Wednesday it expected the insurgent group to play an important role in ending Afghanistan's war and rebuilding the country that, according to the Chinese Foreign Ministry, 9 Taliban representatives met Foreign Minister Wang Yi on a 2-day visit, during which a Taliban spokesman said the peace process and security issues were discussed. Wang said the Taliban is expected to play an important role in the process of peaceful reconciliation and reconstruction in Afghanistan. That according to an account of the meeting from the foreign ministry. He also said that he hoped the Taliban would crack down on the East Turkestan Islamic movement as it was a direct threat to China's national security, referring to a group China says is active in the Xinjiang region in China's far west. After that meeting, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called the China-Taliban meeting possibly a positive thing. Blinken made his comment on a visit to India. VOA's Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad spoke with VOA on possible reasons the Chinese decided to meet with the Taliban.
We saw the Taliban leaders were given a very warm welcome in Beijing, and Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi himself received the Taliban delegation. And for the first time, we saw the Chinese released video footages of those meetings, those handshake with Taliban leaders, and also images of that meeting. So it seems that China is really trying to grab the vacuum that is being created because of the withdrawal of the United States and NATO allies from Afghanistan, and China is trying to step in. There must be some kind of a mediator which is able to convince both the parties that it is time to end this long war because it has really prevented the entire region from economically progressing. And China has this ambition of extending its Belt and Road Initiative, this infrastructure project of President Xi, to Central Asia through Afghanistan.
BOA's Ayaz Gul in Islamabad. Earlier this week, Pakistan's prime minister said that America's accelerated troop exit from Afghanistan has left Washington with no bargaining power for arranging a peace deal between warring Afghans. This comes as the head of the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan said that the Taliban will lose the international legitimacy they gain through their negotiations in Doha if the group does not fulfill its obligation to negotiate with the Afghan government for a political settlement to the conflict. We are very happy you are with us on BOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Nearly a year's worth of rain fell on the Chinese city of Zhengzhou over 4 days this month. The flooding killed 71 people, including 14 trapped in a subway station as waters rose. Zhengzhou is part of a Chinese government initiative to build sponge cities in response to increasing urban flooding across the country. These cities aim to use natural processes to soak up rainwater rather than sending it coursing through concrete drainage pipes and channels that can get overwhelmed or cause other problems. These systems are catching on around the world as city planners embrace the benefits they provide, such as stormwater management, urban cooling, and aesthetic appeal. But experts say the storm that drowned Zhengzhou was more than any city's drainage system could handle. And because of climate change, these kinds of storms are becoming increasingly common around the world. In India, torrential monsoon rains in the west of the country have triggered floods and killed about 200 people. Experts link the increasingly erratic monsoon to climate change and warn that this poses a threat to the lives and livelihoods of millions of people. From New Delhi, Anjana Prasricha has this report.
After torrential monsoon rains buried villages under landslides and flooded towns in India's western Maharashtra state, the region is coping with the aftermath, homes reduced to rubble and inundated farmlands. Rescue teams have waded through debris and swirling waters to evacuate stranded people. It was too late for about 200 people who died.
It was raining very heavily. Then the landslide occurred and many people were washed away as they decided to run.
Much of the destruction occurred in districts along the west coast, a region that witnessed similar havoc 2 years ago. Climate experts link the rising incidence of such ferocious rainfall to global warming, which has affected the oceans where the monsoon winds originate.
The warming of the Arabian Sea and the Western Indian Ocean is bringing up a lot of heat into the atmosphere and also moisture, which is resulting in large-scale fluctuations in the monsoon winds. So though the monsoon winds are weak, occasionally there are episodes when they are very strong and releasing all of the moisture in a short time.
More than a 250,000 people were evacuated. India's agriculture, which sustains more than half the country, is heavily dependent on the monsoon season. But the increasingly erratic rains destroy not just their homes, but also their farm-based livelihoods. Topsoil is washed away, groundwater is not recharged.
Any water-related infrastructure and economic activities that we have, from agriculture to dams to hydroelectricity to groundwater recharge, water supply, everything is getting affected because instead of rain falling over a period of 2 to 3 months, it is falling for a few days and in extreme conditions.
The rising incidence of extreme rains have made India particularly vulnerable to climate change, Bhushan says.
Some of the floods that have hit this country over the last 10 years have caused losses more than $1 billion. So this is affecting our economy, this is affecting livelihood, this is affecting jobs and growth.
Minimizing the impact on struggling communities worst hit by such disasters should be prioritized, say experts. The recent flooding came 2 months after a cyclone lashed the west coast.
The maximum we are doing now is evacuating people, but that only saves lives, not livelihoods. We need to have resilient and sustainable infrastructure development based on these maps, which shows the risk of these extreme events that are increasing.
Until that happens, experts warn millions may face the onslaught of such destruction. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
The Olympics are facing several difficulties, but the games go on. Steve Ross reports for VOA Asia from Tokyo.
Both Japanese citizens and Olympic athletes must grapple with Japan's surging COVID-19 case count. Domestic media reporting newly registered cases throughout Japan exceeding 10,000 for the first time, with a daily record high of almost 3,900 new cases in Tokyo. And for some athletes, the competition schedule is not to their liking, with a 13-hour difference between Tokyo and America's East Coast. Morning competition means lucrative evening broadcasts for networks and Olympic sponsors, but some athletes say they'd prefer events later in the day. With about 4,600 media members from 2,000 outlets visiting Japan, journalists face frequent COVID-19 testing and long delays getting in and out of events. International reporters and photographers must even submit activity plans for their first 2 weeks in Japan, subject to approval by Japanese authorities. Japan's youngest gold medalist ever at age 13, skateboarder Momiji Nishiya, is charming Japan now, but she says that she still has homework on her mind. Suniza Lee taking the Olympic gold in the women's gymnastics individual all-around final, with sidelined teammate Simone Biles cheering her on. Lee is 18 years old and the first Hmong member of Team USA. Japan running its gold medal tally for judo up to 8 today. Competing for Japan, Aaron Wolf, whose father is American, and Shiori Hamada both taking the top podium tier at Tokyo's famed Budokan Arena. Team China surprising both the U.S. and Australia, taking the gold with a world record performance in the women's 4x200-meter freestyle relay. America coming in second with swimmer Allison Schmidt adding a silver medal to her collection, bringing her career Olympic medal total to 10. American pole vaulter Sam Kendricks testing positive for COVID-19. He is now out of the games. Tomorrow, track, boxing, beach volleyball, and much more. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
As you just heard from Steve Ross, Tokyo officials reported a record high number of coronavirus cases Thursday for the third straight day. Japan's health ministry reported nearly 700 more than were reported on Wednesday. Tokyo's governor warned the cases could climb to 4,500 a day. The chief cabinet secretary of Japan said at a media briefing, new infections are also spiking throughout Japan on a scale the country has never experienced. As we continue on VOA Asia, the UN Children's Fund is calling for an end to COVID-19 school closures, which it says are harmful for children's well-being and future prospects. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Schools in the Northern Hemisphere are closed for summer holidays. Elsewhere in the world, schools remain closed because of the pandemic, depriving more than 600 million children of an education. The UN Children's Fund reports nearly half the countries in Asia and Pacific have been closed for more than 200 days during the pandemic. Lengthy school closures also exist in Latin America and the Caribbean, and recent estimates show 40% of all school-aged children across Eastern and Southern Africa currently are not in school. UNICEF spokesman James Elder says these school closures are adversely affecting children's physical and mental well-being.
What this looks like, and we've learned this over the past year from the data, is that education and safety and friends and food are being replaced by anxiety and violence and teenage pregnancy. Across the globe, in all continents, we're seeing child helplines, a good precursor to understanding kids who are reporting violence, seeing often triple-digit increases.
Elder says remote learning is simply not an option for at least a third of the world's school children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thanks for being with us. Our thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Casqueo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Make sure you stay safe enjoy the day ahead.